So in this text called Gyan Sar, there are some new people, so I'll just briefly summarize this text. Gyan Sar means the essence of knowledge. The essence of knowledge. What is the knowledge we are talking about? It's not knowledge of physics or chemistry, but knowledge about who I am, my own nature, my higher nature, my true nature, that is explained in this text. The text starts with the student being ignorant, involved in the world, quite successful, having accomplished a lot, and then sees that permanent happiness is not in the world, and so he starts serving the world as a servant of the Lord and doing good for others, which is very good, but then he feels there is something more that I need to study. So he goes to a teacher and asks him, who am I? Who is this God that they worship? What is my relationship with that God? So the teacher then teaches him the self-knowledge and starts by saying that this world that you see is an appearance, and the reality behind this world is the Lord, the substratum. And that is not only the reality behind the world, but behind every one of us, each and every one of us. It is what we have identified here as Om, or consciousness, or the life principle. And then several other points are covered in the teaching, where he says that there is no duality. The world is only one. I am one with everybody, and that one divinity is expressing as everything, everybody, that one God alone is. And so that understanding, when he gets, then he realizes his oneness with everybody and his oneness with the Creator. Because they say the God alone was first, and from him emerged the whole universe. So if everything emerged from that, then the cause and the effect have to be one and the same. Just as there is one mud out of which we make different parts, then the parts are nothing but that one mud in different names and forms. A saucer, a cup, a plate, a bowl, a vase. So similarly, that one consciousness expresses through all. And that understanding comes to this individual. But then how does this individual work in the world? How are his actions? What does he do? So how does this person work? Does he even work at all? Or does he do nothing? How does a realized master work among the rest of us? And what is the difference between you and me and the master, that is Jesus or Buddha or Shankaracharya or Swami Chinmayananda? What is the difference? We shall try to study today. And that is verse number 16 in page 49. Those who have the book.
Karta na bhokta na kasya pidasaha. Bhokta na kasya pidasaha. Yaham paratma tu sadaiva muktaha. Jnatam maedam nijabodha drishtya. Guru prasadat cha shruti pramanat.
So this student who has now understood the truth has gained the wisdom. Wisdom not only theoretically, but himself has experienced that highest truth, has become one with that reality. How does such a person work? So he says, na karta na bhokta. He says, I am neither a doer nor an enjoyer. So I don't do anything. I don't enjoy anything. So does that mean then he sits like a log of wood, you know, in one corner doing nothing? Well, maybe. Na kasyapi dasaha. And he says, I am not the servant of anybody. I am my own master. He has developed the self-mastery. He is neither the servant of his mind, nor of his senses, nor of anybody in the world. He is self-sufficient. He has developed self-mastery. He hum paratma, and I am the Supreme Spirit, the Supreme Self. As we had said, the Lord alone is everything, but you and I, in our ignorance, think ourselves to be separate. But self-realization or God-realization is nothing but knowing my identity with that Supreme Consciousness. When I realize that the Supreme Consciousness alone is everything through me and is alone in everybody, that state is called wisdom. That state is called realization. So he says, I am that state of supreme understanding, sadaiva muktaha, and I am ever free. Because you and I, we get so bound, we get so dependent, we depend on people or objects or position or power. But the wise person is ever free. How did that happen? He says, how did you become like that? What tell us your secret? In the bottom line, give us in a simple, 2 minute short summary. So he says, how did I become? 3 things happened. Jata maya, how was it known? Nija bodha drishtaya, with my own understanding. Guru prasadat, with the grace of the guru. And shruti pramanat, with the proof from the scriptures. So the teacher, the scriptures, and then my own understanding. These are the 3 ways to obtain this knowledge. And he said all 3 were important in my life. So first of all, what do we mean by that I have nothing to do? Or how does the doership come, that I do something? The doership comes with 5 upadhis or conditionings. There are 5 things that condition us. There are 5 sheets called the food sheet, physiological sheet, mental, intellectual, and the vasanas. What is a sheet? Sheet is a covering, like a sword or a knife. If somebody has, what they do, they put it in a covering, so that it may not hit anybody, and it may remain protected. So the knife is covered. So this self or consciousness, that is our true nature, that is what we are, as if is conditioned by 5 sheets. There is a very beautiful shloka in the Upanishad. It says, pancha koshadi yogena tat tanmaya ivasthitaha shuddhatma neel vastradi yogena sphatiko yatha. He says there are 5 sheets which condition the self, the consciousness, the pure self, which is my nature. By conditioning, it means I identify with them and I get confused. I get deluded. The example they give is like there is a clean crystal, colorless crystal, which is lying on the table. And now, of course, there is a white tablecloth. But suppose tomorrow I had a red tablecloth, then the crystal would appear red. So somebody comes and says, there is a red crystal on the table. And the second day, I put a blue tablecloth, and the same crystal, another person comes and says, this is a blue crystal. The crystal was the same. Nothing happened to the crystal, but because of closeness with the red cloth, it appears red. Next day, the blue cloth, it appears blue. And the 2 people might argue. They might say, I saw a beautiful red crystal. Other one says, no, I saw a blue crystal. And they might come to blows. But in reality, the crystal itself is unconditioned, unaffected, but appears to take on the color of the cloth, which is the closest to it. So similarly, this consciousness that is the same in all of us, that is only one, that is unconditioned, unaffected, but takes on the conditioning depending on the kind of individual. Say it is in a wise person, in a saint. You say, this person is so saintly. So that same consciousness appears saintly. Another person is a very greedy or a very passionate person. That consciousness appears greedy and passionate. A third person is a criminal, is a very wicked person. In that person, the consciousness appears to be wicked or criminal. the consciousness remaining the same, it is the conditioning, it is the upadhi that affects the individual and that makes the difference. So they say there are five coverings of this consciousness. Within us, there are five conditionings, five coverings, which appear to condition the consciousness. One is the food sheath. The food sheath, annamaya kosha, which is the gross body. The gross body is made of food. When I eat food, it strengthens my body. Second is the physiological sheath. That is the pranas, they are called. They are like the function of respiration, circulation, digestion, all the respiratory physiological functions. These are all described in our scriptures. The third is the mind or the mental sheath. The fourth is the intellectual sheath. And the fifth is the vasanas, or what they call as the bliss sheath or the anand sheath. So when I identify with the body, then I say, I am short, I am tall, I am white, I am black, I am old, I am young, I am healthy, I am unhealthy. All these conditionings come and then I get happy or unhappy. When I identify with the physiological function, then I say, my heart is very weak, I have bad lungs, I have bad digestion. So then I get conditioned and get affected by that. At the mental level, I am so stressed, I'm such a emotional person, I'm so sentimental, so I think myself, I get so caught up in my emotions that that alone becomes real and it takes away my inner joy. Similarly, at the intellectual level, some people say, I'm no good, I can't chant, I can't memorize, I can't give talks, I have a hard time remembering, I try to study and I can't study, I fall asleep. So we identify with the intellectual, and then the last is with the desires. Like I'm such a greedy person, or I'm such a lazy person, or I'm such a passionate person. So my desires, I want this, I want that. So all of these bind us, all of these make us dependent. I get dependent on my physical needs, on physiological, mental, intellectual, emotional. We are not saying that one should not take care of those sheaths, but if you get so affected by what is happening at the mental level, I'm getting stressed out, then it ruins my peace of mind. Worldly problems come. But if I say to myself that I am that pure spirit who at this moment is functioning through these five sheaths, without getting affected, I take care of all those sheets and I watch like an observer. Okay, my body is getting old. My mind at this moment, there is some stress. The mic is not working. So I can watch it and say, okay, let's just get along with it. Intellectually, something didn't go well in my life. I had a problem. And even our deepest desires, our vasanas, they have a hold on us, and I feel that I'm helpless. Somebody who loves to drink, or somebody who has this desire for power or money, feels totally helplessly trapped and says, I can't help it. I was like that. My father was like that. My grandfather, I was born like that. But a wise person can get out of all of those and become independent. Then he says, I am not the servant. What does he mean by servant? Servant does not mean that he is the lord of the universe, but he has become so self-sufficient, so confident, that he does not need anybody's patronage, because he says, I am content. Whatever little the Lord has given me, I am happy, I am content. So they say there are two conditionings. One is the total consciousness working through the entire universe is called Ishvara. That total consciousness functioning through the individual is called the Jiva. You and I at this moment are caught in this Jivahood where I think I am this limited individual. And because of that, I suffer the limited my limited abilities, my limited success. I think of myself as a useless creature. But when I realize that the divinity in me is the same as the divinity in Jesus, is the same as the divinity in the saints, there's one divinity alone, then I develop that ability to be more successful. And what helps us a lot is the scriptures. The Vedas here are the ancient Indian scriptures which tell us what is Shreya, what is good, and what is Preya, what is pleasant. We are studying the Kathopanishad on Tuesday. Some of you are. And there it says it very clearly that in life you have constantly to make choices. You want what is pleasant, what is fun, what is pleasurable, or you want what is good. And a lot of times we are out of habit, just choose the easy path of fun and pleasure. And we ignore what is good for us, whether it is food, whether it is diet, whether it is exercise, whether it is what books I read, what TV shows I watch, what kind of people I associate with, what do I surf on the net. If you constantly make good choices as opposed to pleasant choices, your path will go towards the good. Talking about choices reminds me of a story. This teacher was teaching his students about importance of making right choices, especially as regards to alcohol, you know, because they were teenagers. And he said, you know, this is something, is a big problem among youth. So you should make right choices in your life. You know, don't just because some friends tell you, you know, don't start drinking and all that. So then he says, you know, I had my donkey, the ass, and he says, I put in front of him a bowl of water and a bowl of alcohol. And I asked the donkey to choose, and he drank the water. So what does that tell you? So he says, one of the students raises his hands and says, one who doesn't drink is an ass. I guess he made his choice. So that is what the knowledge that is obtained from the scriptures. And who interprets the scriptures for us? It is the guru. It is the teacher. And because these scriptures are written in ancient language, they could be written in Hebrew or ancient Sanskrit or Greek or Latin. So we need a wise teacher who can interpret for them for us. And they say the teacher should be one who not only has the knowledge, because there could be a university professor who might know Sanskrit and can translate all the Upanishads and give a beautiful talk and, you know, even grant PhDs to other students, but himself does not have this experience of the truth. And that is why they say find a teacher who has not only studied the scriptures, but has the personal experience. And such a teacher can become a true guru. And when you get those two, when you get a teacher and when you get the scriptures that have been interpreted by the teacher, who the teacher himself has nothing to gain, because he has already realized the truth, he already has the experience. But out of compassion for you and me, they travel throughout the world and they write the books and they give talks and they give us all the information so that we may also reach that same level. So it's out of their love and compassion. So, but as long as it remains in the books, or it remains with the teacher, it does not become my own understanding. I may even read the books. I may even listen to the teacher. I may even spend a lot of time with the teacher. But until that knowledge becomes my own understanding, where I can apply that in my life, where I can become one with that knowledge, like you may have a recipe of cooking. You know all the world's recipes, but only when you actually combine to get the food from the store, put it all together, reading the recipe, then cook it. And then when you eat that food, the food becomes one with you. Then that recipe has become your own understanding. So similarly, the teacher has taught us, but then we have to start applying. But we say, I am not at the level of the teacher. That's okay, but at least you can use the teacher as a role model. just as a basketball player looks at Michael Jordan's videos, a football player looks at Joe Montana, how he threw the ball. So similarly, I have to look at the lives of great masters, great teachers, and start living like them, at least to some extent, develop some degree of detachment so that I am not dependent on the world for my happiness, develop some degree of right understanding, develop some of the purity of mind, some of the pure qualities that they had, like love and compassion and kindness and sharing. So as I slowly pattern my life based on the lives of these great saints, that's why they say you should read the lives of saints, because there's a beautiful saying. It says, lives of great men all remind us that we can make our lives sublime, and departing leave behind us footprints on the sands of time. So that's why the lives of great people tell us that you and I can also do that. So make that, and slowly, slowly, they describe it as the opening of an onion. The realization of the truth is like when you're trying to peel an onion. You peel layers, one layer, then another layer, then another layer, and you keep peeling, peeling, and then you peel the last layer, there is nothing. It's emptiness. So similarly, this understanding of this truth is like that. Slowly, slowly, the ideas become more and more clear. It's like the clouds over your intellect slowly get cleared. And ultimately, you come to understand that knowledge that I was seeking, I already have it. There is nothing more. So that is called understanding. And then they say the wise person has nothing to do. So you say, what do you mean? Is he a useless, like a rock, just sitting like a statue? No, when do we have things to do? Why do you and I do things? We do things either that by getting this thing, by doing this particular deed, I'll get some joy, or I will avoid some sorrow. So either sukha prapti or dukha nivritti. By doing this, I'll get this happy thing, or this unhappy thing will not happen to me. This sickness will not happen, or my boss won't get angry. So all of us. But we do it out of incompleteness, that by doing this, I'll become complete. By doing this, I'll become happy. But a wise person who has everything, who has attained the highest peace, he may be a beggar, he may have just two pairs of clothes, but he has discovered the inner bliss, then he has no compulsion to act. The wise person may act, but out of love, out of compassion, out of sharing. But you and I work because we are compelled to work. I have to work constantly, day and night, morning, evening. And we feel so stressed because it is like we are driven to work. And think about it. Work is never over. The work is never done. Like, nowadays with computers, you wake up in the morning, there are 50 emails to answer. And then by the end of the day, you have slogged through them and finished through the work. Okay, 25 are done. Thank God, 25 are done. You go to sleep, you wake up in the morning, another 25 come. Or they say like a woman's work is never done. The dinner is over and everybody's tired and the dishes have been put in the sink. And then next morning, she wakes up, she's dishes in the sink and her heart sinks. Because she thought that magically some genie would come and have done them through the night. It doesn't happen. The work is constantly there. So you and I are constantly under the pressure of work. But a wise person works not out of compulsion, not out of pressure, but his or her work is out of love, out of compassion, out of sharing. He becomes an instrument of the Lord. The Lord himself is functioning through that individual. Then that person has no stress in their life, has no pressure, because spontaneous love, spontaneous sharing. So that is the difference. You and I, we think that the work will make us complete. So we work for completeness. He works out of completeness. Because he is complete, he is perfect. He's sharing that compassion with us. So this is a very beautiful picture of the man of wisdom, how the man of wisdom works in the world. He He has all the physiological equipments, but is not attached to them. Even when it comes time to drop the body, the person can cheerfully do that because he says, I am the pure self who at this moment was occupying this body. When it comes time to drop the body, it's like dropping an old pair of clothes. He has no fear of death. He becomes immortal. He becomes totally absence of fear. He becomes self-sufficient. He is the master of his world. And having studied the scriptures from the guru, he has developed the right understanding. And then he says, karta na bhokta. I am not the doer. I am not the enjoyer. Whatever is being done by the body. And the body is enjoying the fruits. But I am the pure self. That blissful state is what we all need to try for. It's a very beautiful verse. And I'm sure there will be some comments, some discussion.
That's so much to do. And just that little shift makes all the difference for me.
Right. You're doing every activity as a service of the Lord, right?
Mm-hmm. Right. You're not expecting any kind of reward.
True. No, I also had a very busy day my whole week. And to this morning, I've been standing almost constantly from 8 o'clock till 5. And by 5, my feet were really aching. But when I came here and sat down and prepared, it takes away that, you know, that fatigue and that pain, because, you know, it's so joyful just to talk about the Lord and to listen to his glories. And so I think, like you said, not every one of us can be like Jesus or Mahatma Gandhi or Swami Chinmayananda. I cannot be like the sun, but I can be a lamp in my own home or at my work. I can at least illumine my place of work like you're doing. I mean, we cannot illumine the whole world like these prophets could, but I think that's a very good example of where I am at least making a difference in my environment, making it a more pleasant place. And not only that, but the people you influence will hopefully go out and influence others. The patient you were nice to, you know, he will go out with a pleasant atmosphere. And, you know, that way, that's how it ripples. So that's very good. Yeah, thank you.
I don't know if I can explain this properly, but personally in my life, always been trying to get out of one stressful situation, and that caused a lot of stress in itself. Mm-hmm. Then when I got out of it, I was in another stressful situation. And I was in the same situation, trying to get out of that, and that caused a lot of stress.
Yeah, absolutely. No, you're absolutely right. I was talking to a friend of mine who was my classmate, very good friend of mine. I said, what are you doing these days? He said, I'm a cardiologist in Chicago, very busy. He was very, very prominent in national. I said, what are you doing? He said, I plan to keep working till I die. I said, just keep doing cats. Yep, that's all I know how to do. You know, that's all. So we don't think of, and then he asked me, what are you doing? And then I told him, I said, I've cut down my work and I'm doing part-time this. So he was really shocked, because we don't know anything different. It is just the guru's grace that we have this ability. Otherwise, most of us, as you said, from morning to night, from birth to death, we just keep doing that. And he said, I plan to keep working till I drop. You know, so then what? What have you accomplished? I mean, maybe he has helped people as a doctor, but, you know, you haven't done anything for your own self-growth, you know, for your own evolution, spiritual evolution. Ultimately, that's all that most important.